Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Do you remember when the Packers and the Bears played on Thursday night? Do you remember how awful it was? Neither do I, because I watched the Buccaneers and the Panthers last night, and that game was so bad, I don't remember anything about anything. That game was so awful last night, I'm not even sure I remember my own name. Like, who the hell am I? What do I do for a living? Why am I sitting at this white desk behind this microphone? Why are these cameras pointed at me? I feel like Douglas Quaid and the recall company has erased my brain completely.
Get off you! You blew my cover!
It's one of my favorite movies ever. The original Total Recall. Consider that a divorce. I'll never forget where I was. Well, the movie theater. When I first heard that line, consider that a divorce. I was like out of my seat. Like, Arnold, man, that is fire. Consider that a divorce. In other words, back to that game last night. Bucks-Panthers, Thursday night football. That was Thursday night football at its best. Which really means that was Thursday night football at its worst. That was not a Thursday night football game. That was the Thursday night football game. That was an extreme version of Thursday night football. Because that had everything. Weird camera work, a weather delay, TMZ footage of a fight among Panther fans during the weather delay, a doinked field goal, a safety, referees just wandering around the field with the ball, and a ton of reviews. And by the way, did Tampa Bay, did they really call two timeouts in a row in the fourth quarter? Or was I hallucinating at that point? And did the Panthers run some goofy trick play on fourth down at the goal line instead of just using their giant quarterback on a sneak? Yeah, they did. Roll it.
Newton moves over. Direct snap to McCaffrey. McCaffrey trying to loop to the left. Can't get there. But did he get to the first down marker? The Buccaneers believe they've stuffed him. Hargraves makes the tackle. Tampa Bay is celebrating. No gain for McCaffrey.
Thanks to Westwood One for that. I mean, that was a really weird play call. In a night of really weird play calls. Like, you know, because you've got Cam Newton, who is enormous, and who could probably sneak it those 2 feet, instead of having some slow-developing trick play that nobody bought in the first place. Bucks corner, Vernon Hargraves, made the play on Christian McCaffrey, but he said it was pretty obvious. Quote, "You watch any football, and you've seen it a few times. Once I saw Cam walk up to the line of scrimmage and act like he was talking to me, I had a pretty good idea what was going on." End quote. Damn. That's pretty damning. That's pretty damning of a Norv Turner trick play. If the defense is starting off by saying, you watch any football and you've seen it a few times, then you know it's not a trick play. It's just a bad play. Then again, that whole game was bad. And because of it, so was my night. In fact, I'm going to call that one of the worst nights of my entire life. Because that was one of the worst games I've ever seen. That game was so brutal to watch that I made it this far without even mentioning the score. Tampa Bay had 20 points. Carolina had 14 points. But believe me, there were no winners last night. And while I know my man Bruce Arians is not about to apologize for that win, he should. So should anybody who had anything to do with that disaster. Y'all can apologize to me personally. You see, we're all on the clock. We all have a finite amount of time in this life. And that is one full night that I will never, ever get back. And just know, I'm not going to accept that apology. I just better damn well get one. There's so many questions coming off that night, starting with Cam Newton. I tweeted last night, I'm not a doctor, but I don't need to be to know that there is something wrong with Cam. Let me add to that right now. I'm not a coach or a GM or even a scout. But I don't need to be to know that Newton simply is not the same player he used to be. Now, he'll never go as far as to own that, but he did own his own poor play last night, saying this.
It's hard to look defensive guys in their eyes after a game like this, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, offensively, we don't hold up our end of the bargain. But needless to say, I mean, that's the obvious. You know, it wasn't, you know, we didn't, like I say, we just didn't uphold our end, and we're past due. Special teams had a good return. Defensively was stout all game. But all fingers are just pointing back to me specifically in offense.
That's pretty stand up, right? That's stand up. And there is more.
I have to be better. No matter what physical condition I'm in, no matter what foot, shoulder, I ain't get the job done tonight, man. And it's frustrating. I wish I could say something other than that, but you know, that's the facts. And you know, I'm extremely brutally honest person, you know, with people, and I'm extremely brutally honest with myself. And it's time for me to look myself in the mirror and, you know, do some real soul searching, because I had opportunities tonight and I didn't get it done.
All right, so again, that is stand up. But my question is this: didn't get it done, or just isn't right? He didn't get it done, or this dude just isn't right. Seems to me he's just not right at all. Not when he drops back to pass, not when he passes, not when he does anything, and certainly not when he runs, because he's not even allowed to run anymore. Like, as jacked up as this world is right now, I still think there is one thing that we could pretty much all agree on: that Cam Newton is not right. And I'm not even sure that's subject to debate. Of course the guy's not right. With the game on the line and fourth and short, with Superman under center, your 6'5", 240-pound former NFL MVP doesn't even touch the ball? If that doesn't say the dude's not right, what the hell does? Yet the team keeps saying he's healthy. The shoulder is fine. The foot is fine. All the other injuries he suffered from all the other shots, he's good. That doesn't matter. That's not a factor. All right? All right. So if that's true, what the hell is going on? Because the guy didn't forget how to play quarterback or how to be a dominant force on the football field. Again, he was the league MVP only a few years back. If he's healthy, why is he run for a total of -2 yards this season? If he's healthy, why were they not sneaking him on fourth down from the goal line? Wait, I can answer that. Because he's not right. Because he's not the player he used to be. Because all that punishment has taken a toll. But if you need to hear it from somebody other than me, listen to Hargraves. Quote, he can't take them hits like that. It's going to eat his body up. We expect him more throwing as he gets older in his career. Now, if this was year one, yes, I'd be surprised. But you know where he's at in his career, he's got to take care of himself so he can play all 16 and lead his team to the playoffs. But no, not really too surprised that he's not running and things of that nature, end quote. All right, so let me be very clear about this. Having said all that, I want to be clear about one thing. This is not a criticism of Cam. It's not a criticism of Cam per se. I'm just stating the facts. I'm not criticizing the man. I mean, like, he has shown how good he can be, and he certainly has shown how tough he is. When he's right, he's borderline unstoppable. My point is, he hasn't been right for quite some time. And the thing is, this guy is so tough that he keeps trying to fight through everything. He continues to take a pounding. He keeps taking hits. And he was still slinging it last year, even when it looked like his arm might fall off. So the worst part of last night for Carolina is not that they lost. It's not that they're 0-2. It's not that Cam is injured. No, the worst part of last night would be if Cam is not injured. The worst part would be if last night is the new normal. That this is just what happens when you take thousands of hits. And the Cam Newton is just another example of, it doesn't matter how big you are, it doesn't matter how tough you are, you can't take hits forever. Fact is, teams are not scared of this guy anymore. They know the toll that the game has taken on him, and it sure looks like they're daring him to beat them, and right now he can't. I think Cam said it best when he said this.
I say it all the time, man. Sometimes, you know, you find yourself in a blender, and only person that can get you out is yourself.
Carolina finds itself in a blender, and they better get itself out or themselves out stat, or his and their season is going to be over before it even starts. And if Cam really can't use his legs anymore, the Kryptonite,
it's like Kryptonite,
has finally deprived Superman of his powers. Because my man no longer looks like Superman. He It looks like somebody just dumped a bunch of kryptonite all over him. Are you craving some protein after a good workout? Listen, don't make a shake. Don't grab a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and it's tender. It's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. And it goes wherever you go. To the game, to the gym, to the beach. So look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. Clones, if you don't see it, ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Mark Canna is my guest. Mark, nice to have you on. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, Jim.
Good to have you, Mark. Really nice to visit with you. So you finished up a four-game series with the Astros, and if we go back, Mark, to the first game of that series, you went into Houston having won 5 out of 6, then they got you 15-0 in the opener. Would have been pretty easy for guys maybe to get frustrated or to get down after a game like that, but what was the mood like in the clubhouse after the opener?
I think, well, a lot of our starters got pulled out of that game in, like, the third or fourth inning, and I don't know how everyone else felt. I don't speak for everyone else, but I kind of felt like it was actually nice to get a little bit of a breather. And then also at the same time, you know, you come out of a game like that and I was kind of just thinking like, well, we just lost 15-0, but it's one loss. Like we, you know, 3-2, 15-0. It's one game. And, you know, we still got a chance to win this series and move on. I think it kind of felt like that was the general mood.
And then it plays out like that because you come back on Tuesday and you beat them 21-7, then 5-3. Then last night you beat Justin Verlander 3-2 when Liam Hendricks closed it out with a strikeout with a runner on third. Can you take me through that final inning with so much on the line? Like what kind of emotions are running through you and how good did it feel to close that thing down?
I mean, I wanted to win that game so bad. It's just being, you know, our last regular season game in Houston against the Astros and it's kind of like, oh, let's just get this one and get into Arlington on a happy flight. and our close pitches the whole inning, I'm screaming out in center field at the pitches that are just missing. And Liam got a strikeout, I think, with two on and nobody out, first and second, nobody out. And right then I was like, all right, he's locked in. He's going to do this just like he has been all year. So. I think I kind of had a feeling that Liam was going to slam the door.
Oakland A's Mark Canna joining us. So that win, Mark, has you a half game ahead of Tampa Bay for the first wild card spot, as I mentioned. What's it like to come to the yard every day in September with so much on the line and stakes so high?
I think it makes it more fun and got something to play for. I've been on the other end of the spectrum where you're not playing for anything. You're just in last place. You're kind of running out the clock on the season, and that is not fun. So it's cool to be in it. It's cool to be getting talked about, and I think, you know, we're excited to be in the position we're in.
Mark Canna is my guest. Now, at the very top, I introduced you as an Oakland A's player without naming a spot or a position because you've done pretty much everything this year. All three outfield spots, first base, DH, as well as pinch hitting and pinch running. A lot of guys talk about how playing different spots in the field can mess with them at the plate, but it doesn't seem to have any kind of impact on you, no negative impact. So how do you stay locked in and ready no matter where you're playing?
I think I just try to take each day one by one and kind of focus on the task at hand. That's always been the key to me. And whether it's a different position or whether you're pinch hitting, it's kind of just getting into that moment and getting into that day and kind of visualizing how the day is going to go and staying present and thinking about how you're going to be, you know, valuable to the team that day.
You know, Mark, you mentioned when I mentioned that in the opener, they beat you 15-0 Houston, and you said, you know what, it wasn't that big of a deal because it's only one game, it's one loss. Some of the regulars got out of there, we got a breather. It kind of goes back to Bob Melvin. Now, that's a guy, you've been with the A's since 2015, and I know the respect that Bob Melvin has for you. What's it like for you to play for him?
It's the best. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I mean... It's really my only experience in the big leagues. He's been my only manager, and this is the only team I played for in the big leagues. So But from, you hear things and just the environment we come into every day is so just relaxed. I think relatively speaking around the league, Bowmel just kind of lets everyone be themselves. I think everyone comes in is very comfortable and allowed to just kind of do their own thing. We have a lot of fun, but at the same time we work hard, and it's kind of this unspoken, like, relax and get your work done on when you need to kind of vibe.
So you're from San Jose. You went to Cal. You were drafted by the Marlins, but now you're with the A's. What's it like to be from the area and playing for the hometown team?
It's amazing. Honestly, I was with the Marlins for 5 years, and I didn't even all that time I didn't get to go home very often except for holidays. So my wife, she wasn't my wife at the time, but at the time we were dating, and we always thought we wanted to end up in the Bay Area. And I'll never forget the day I was Rule 5 and picked up by the A's. My wife was jumping on the bed in joy just because we're going back to the Bay Area where we always wanted to end up anyway. And it was just a pretty sweet situation. It's, you know, we don't get to choose where we play a lot of times. So it was, it's awesome. My parents get to come see me all the time. My brothers, sisters, friends, it's just awesome.
Mark Canna joining me for a few more moments. That's really cool. So people who know you know that you love food. Your Instagram handle is Big League Foodie. So when you're coming up through the minors, for example, there's not a lot of money to spend on food and maybe not the best food. How did you go about handling that at that time?
I started doing it when I was in the big leagues, but I still, in the minor leagues, I spent actually some time in some really good food cities. Greensboro, North Carolina, Jupiter, Florida, great seafood there. I love the southern food in Greensboro, and just they got a lot of good stuff there. And then I finished my minor league career in New Orleans, which was like blew my mind. I think really opened me up to different kinds of food and Creole food and crawfish and stuff like that. And I think that was the tip kind of when I got to New Orleans, a place I'd never been before, and it was like this whole culinary world that I didn't really understand before. And it was just I fell in love with the city and I fell in love with food.
All right, so when you get to the majors, you obviously you can visit some really special restaurants. When you think about the best meals that you've had this season, what comes to mind?
Oh, man. There's this really good place in San Francisco called Quince. It has 3 Michelin stars. It's amazing. I went to Alinea in Chicago, which is like Grant Achatz is on Chef's Table, and it's all this molecular gastronomy and food you're eating that you don't even know what it is, and it's just like this crazy experience that you didn't even know existed in the world. And it's just stuff like that. It's just awesome. I can't believe, you know, it's kind of why I do what I do with the food thing. It's just these crazy restaurants where you're like, how do people come up with this? And it's just really fun. I have a lot of fun with it.
No, I'm totally into it. Like, for instance, when you go to a big city, I mean, do you go big in every city you go into, or do you save like special meals for special moments? Like, what's your approach?
A lot of it has to do with whether my wife's with me or not.
Right.
I gotta show the missus a good time when she comes on the road. So, We go big when she's in town. A lot of times, too, it depends on how I'm feeling. Like, we just were in Houston, and I know for a fact Houston has a great food scene. But at this point in the season, I was by myself, and I'm pretty, you know, we're trying to rest and recover, and baseball's becoming, these games are becoming very, very important. So I didn't leave the hotel in Houston. I just ordered room service every day and got as much sleep as possible. So I try to balance the food thing with my career, but at the same time, I want to get out there and experience as much as I can in the food world.
See, last thought, I'm trying to balance the baseball thing with the food thing when I talk to you, but I love the food thing too. Like when you go to a city, if you're going to go out, how do you determine where you're going to eat?
Some places is easier than others. Like New York, I kind of have a list of places that I haven't been yet in New York, and obviously they have a big scene, and there's a lot of places to go to. But otherwise, good old-fashioned research. There's this website called withthelocals.com that I check out a lot, and they're pretty reliable. Excuse me, with different markets and stuff. And typically I'll just kind of Google and surf around and check out menus online. And I always tell people, they're like, how do you find these places? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I just look on your phone for 15 minutes and find something you like.
They're great matchups, but to me, it's already time to talk about Monday. Browns v. Jets. Sam Darnold v. Mono. Well, actually, he's already lost that battle against the makeout disease, at least as it relates to this week. So instead, it's Baker v. Trevor Siemian. Odell v. Greg. OBJ v. Triple G. Huh? I'm not sure what was the more unlikely topic that we'd be hitting on at this point. Sam Darnold missing multiple games because of mono. Trevor Siemian trying to save the Jets season. Or Odell Beckham versus the Jets defensive coordinator. Odell v. Greg is the title fight here. But a quick note on the undercard. Do not come up in here and start in about how the Jets are cursed. Look, I know how rare it is for an NFL quarterback to get mono and how brutal it is for that quarterback to be expected to miss multiple games because of mono and how tough it would be to face the Browns, the Patriots, the Eagles, maybe the Cowboys, and the Pats again with Trevor Siemian. I get all that. It doesn't mean the Jets are cursed. They're not. They're just the Jets. So don't get that twisted. Now that that's out of the way, let's get to Odell. Odell had some thoughts about facing the Jets and Greg Williams. Those thoughts go back to the 2017 preseason where he suffered a sprained ankle. A sprained ankle as a result of a hit from a Browns DB.
The only thing I'm buying is, you know, probably just got to watch out for the cheap shots and the dirty hits and all the things that he likes to teach. That's pretty much all we got to watch out for. Other than that, I expect the same. Too high safety. I don't expect much man-to-man. I don't expect none of that.
That's a really pointed statement that he could not wait to get to. So Beckham took issue with the hit and with the fact that that came during the preseason and with the fact that he says that Browns players who were on the team at that time said that Greg Williams actually told them to do stuff like that.
Like in preseason, like nobody in the NFL is really out to do stuff like that. I had players on this team telling me that that's what he was telling them to do. Take me out of the game, and it's preseason. So you just know who he is. Just the man. That's the man. Call him the players.
You know who he is. You know what he does. You know what he's about. Yeah, I don't know about that. I'm not sure, Odell. I mean, really? Greg Williams? That Greg Williams was telling his players to knock guys out of the game. Not Triple G. The Greg Williams I know is not about that life. I mean, come on, man. That is blasphemous. The Greg Williams that I know would not want to take Odell Beckham out of a preseason game with an ankle injury. Let me tell you about the Greg Williams I know.
If you're hit, the body will die. Little wide receiver, number 10, about his concussion. Put a lick on every single one of you before you get off the pile. Affect the head.
Kill the head, the body will die.
Continue. Touch and hit the head. We're going to kill the
he hit.
To make sure we kill Frank Gore's head.
Early, affect the head.
We want his head sideways. He has no idea what he's in for. Go get that on the sideline.
You see, the Greg Williams I know would not be trying to get guys out of the game with a low hit. He'd want them going high. He's not looking to affect the ankle. He's looking to affect the head. In that preseason game, did he specifically tell guys to go out there and take out Odell Beckham? I don't know. I wasn't there. But I could see where Odell might think that. And you sure as hell can't say that it doesn't sound like something that Greg Williams would do. This is a guy whose most famous contribution to the sport of football is the quote, affect the head. You're telling me that a guy who once said, kill the head and the body will die. Kill the head and the body will die. Are you telling me that that same guy, and he said it, you heard the tape. Are you telling me that same guy would only save that mentality for the regular season or the postseason? I mean, does Greg Williams sound like a guy who only dials it up from week one on? Hell no. Preseason football is football to Greg Williams. If there are helmets, pads, and a ball, it is football to Greg Williams. It's not an organized scrimmage or a glorified walkthrough. He's not looking for guys to go half speed. He's not there to coast through anything or half-ass anything. And this is the weird thing that always happens when Triple G's name comes up. There's always an army of people who want to jump up and defend this guy. And on some level, like, I almost get it. I almost get it. Because from the sound of it, he inspires a lot of loyalty from his current and former players. And they would have you believe that he only wants his defense to dominate, to smash the opposition, to take them out of the game, either mentally or physically. But he wants them to do it in a clean way. And the people who claim that he teaches cheap shots and dirty hits are just wrong and they don't know what they're talking about. And then these same people tie themselves in knots when the audio comes out. And the audio is out there. And then people try to say, yeah, well, you just don't understand what he's saying. Again, we're talking about a guy who said, quote, we've got to do everything in the world to make sure we kill Frank Gore's head.
To make sure we kill Frank Gore's head.
Kill Frank Gore's head. That's not a metaphor. That's not Triple G talking about, like, kill the head of a snake. He's talking specifically about Frank Gore's head. That's literal. That's not kill the head of the snake. That's kill Frank Gore's head, his actual head. So when you hear that audio, and when you know Greg's track record, it's kind of hard to say that he wouldn't say that about Beckham. It's kind of hard to say that what Beckham is saying might not be true. Like, I don't know that he specifically told his guys to sprain Beckham's ankle and sideline him, but I certainly can't say that he wouldn't say that. You want to claim that the guy who said, quote, every single one of you, before you get off the pile, affect the head. Early affect the head. Continue to touch and affect the head. Are you going to tell me that that guy wouldn't say or do what Beckham described? Is affecting heads when you get off the pile, quote, good, clean football? Is affecting the head after the whistle not a cheap shot? Is that not a dirty move? So, all of that said, how is it inconceivable that the guy who said all of that would encourage his guys to take Odell Beckham out of a preseason game? Look, I'm not exactly sure what the debate is here. There really is no controversy. No, I wasn't there, so I guess I don't know per se, but I know who I believe in this case, and it's not Triple G or his army. It's double L, Odell. I'm more likely to believe that Triple G has had numerous NFL head coaching opportunities that he didn't even need to interview for than I am to believe that he didn't order the code red on ODB. Hey, Odell, you know what's up. You know what's up, Odell. while the entire world is focusing on your ticker Monday night, you keep your head on a swivel, my man.
We want his head sideways.
Keep your head on a swivel, because I got a feeling they might be trying to affect your head.
We're going to kill the f***ing head.
Kill the bleeping head. If you found 100 bucks on the street, what would you do? Would you pick it up or would you keep walking? Of course, you take the money. So why do you keep picking winners? So why do you keep picking winners and not bet on them? This is why I go to my bookie, because it's fast, it's easy, and they pay when you win. Let's face it, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. And you know I would not be telling you to bet with them if they weren't the best. So do the smart thing. If you're going to bet football this season, then do it with my bookie. Did you know that you could bet on games after kickoff? If by the second half it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can always just take the other side. And if you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little bit but win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you will multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of year. Join right now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use the promo code Rome. Activate that amazing offer. Promo code Rome. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Ty Insecki is my guest. Ty, it's good to have you back on. How are you?
How you doing? How you doing?
Good,
pleasure,
good. Ty, how about you?
On the radio again.
Good to have you on the radio again. All right, Ty, take me back to Sunday. Let me start right there, because the game did not start great for the offense, but nobody gave up, and then completely turns it around in the second half. Obviously, there might be a few things to clean up, but how much does scoring unanswered points on the road say about the mental toughness of your team?
Well, we knew going into the season through preseason that we were a mentally tough group, you know, because we had ebbs and flows during the preseason that helped build the mental makeup of the guys in the locker room. So, you know, nobody blinked an eye when we were down. You know, that's just a test to show how good our defense is. They were able to hold them and just, you know, wait till our offense got to clicking on the field and you know, we started putting points up.
Bills offensive lineman Ty Insecki is my guest. Now, your quarterback, Josh Allen, he had 4 turnovers in the first half, but then in the fourth quarter, he goes 8-for-10, 103 yards and a touchdown. How much did he show you in the way he bounced back from that tough first half?
Once again, you know, just the mental makeup of the guys in the locker room. It just showed how resilient, you know, of a bunch are, and how resilient of a group that we're able to withstand adversity, you know, in a hostile environment as New York, and go out there and pull off the win.
Now, Ty, one more thing about your quarterback, Allen. Like, you and I, the last time you were on the program, we talked quite a bit about how much time you've been around the sport, how much time you've been around the league. So what do you see in Allen that makes you feel like he might be special?
Man, he's a great leader. You know, he goes in there, nothing is too much. You know, they don't break down the playbook for him. The playbook is wide open. Just everything that you want in a franchise quarterback. You know, he got a big arm. He makes great decisions with the ball. And, you know, we just got to go out there and execute the offense this upcoming Sunday.
Now, in terms of ESPN stats, you tied for the league lead among tackles on Sunday with a 100% win rate in pass blocking, and you were huge in the 2 touchdown drives in the fourth quarter. So how good did it feel to play such an important role in that win?
You know, like I said before, once every time my number is called upon, you know, I just try to go out there and do my job. It felt great to get back out there. You know, every time I'm able to get on the field and play the sport that I love to play is a blessing. So, you know, I just look at it and thank the man above.
Ty Insecki is joining us. Now, you got a lot of new faces on that roster, and you're a part of that. So how do you go about getting everybody on the same page and look to develop an identity as quickly as possible? How does that work?
Oh, man, you know, we got a lot of veterans in this group. So it's just bringing in the mentality that everybody has, you know, being tough and resilient and trying to build upon that. And, you know, just everybody coming together, you know, we're gelling. It takes time to actually gel and become a cohesive group. But I feel like we're getting there. We're getting there.
I'm talking about the Giants on Sunday, too, Ty. You're preparing to face them. As you get ready for the Giants, what is the biggest thing that jumps out to you?
We got to start off fast. You know, last week we started off pretty slow. We didn't execute when we were in the red zone. This week we're, you know, trying to take advantage of the opportunities that we're given. So just try to go out there and execute the game plan to the best of our ability.
You know, Tom, when you and I spoke last time, I talked about your journey and how incredible it is, but it turns out more amazing than I thought. And I want to be really careful and really sensitive in talking about this, but this journey that started with you not playing a ton of college ball and spending time with double-digit teams also includes some time in prison as the result of a misdemeanor and a bench warrant and some other complications. Can you share your thoughts on that? What was time like for you in prison?
Oh, man, that was a rough time in my life. You know, that was being at the bottom of life right there. You know, that was the time for me to reflect on where my life went wrong and what I was going to do when I got the opportunity to get my freedom back. So it gave me a lot of time to just sit and reflect and try to map out my goals and strategy on what I was going to do with the rest of my life.
Ty Nsekhe is my guest, and I would imagine as part of that reflection, you told the Buffalo News, quote, I went from being a highly recruited, highly touted football player in my town, in my state, to catching the bluebird to prison. I was like, damn, where'd I go wrong, end quote. So when that moment sunk in, when that finally sunk in, what was that like?
Man, that was a hard pill to swallow, you know. It humbles you. You know, that was a real humbling experience just to be put in that situation. Well, to put myself in that situation. And, you know, it was a real hard lesson that was learned. And, you know, I was able to, when I regained my freedom, you know, learn from my mistakes and fortunately not make those again.
Yeah, Ty, I appreciate you, and I appreciate you being open about that. I want to ask you one more thing because you have a comment that I thought was really striking. You said, quote, the whole reality setting in where you've got the correctional officer sitting up at the front with a shotgun and one behind me with a shotgun, and I'm riding to the penitentiary. I want it to break down, but I'm not built like that, end quote. How did you keep it together? How did you go about not breaking down in that moment?
Well, that just goes to show my mental toughness. You know, I just know everything in life happens for a reason. And I just had to put my faith in God and just realize that, you know, this situation is only temporary. So in the meantime, I'm going to get through it. And when I get through it, you know, there'll be brighter days on the other side. So that just kept me motivated to keep it positive and try to get through it the best way I knew how.
So what kind of thoughts were you having about football? Was football on your radar at that time?
Not necessarily upon entry, but somewhat when I realized I was going home. Now I put back into action what my plan was going to be.
So when you go through something like that, I mean, you went through hell and you got back to where you are right now. You're playing in the NFL. You're playing at a really high level. If somebody's listening right now, Ty, and they feel like maybe they've hit rock bottom, they've made some mistakes, they're not sure where to turn, what to do, where to go, what to think, what would you say to that person?
Man, life can go in so many different directions. You know, just because you're at the point of life that you're at currently, that doesn't mean you have to end up there. So just take the if life gives you lemons, take the lemons and try to make them into lemonade. You know, take the cards that you're dealt and try to play the hand as best as you can. So never give up on what the situation is. Everything happens for a reason, and the reason, most times that reason is to make you a stronger person. It builds character when you go through adversity. So the better you can weather the storm and go through adversity, the better off you'll be as a person.
Ty Nsekhe is my guest. So you've got a couple of businesses, and then after you signed with the Bills, you bought your mother a house. And the story goes that when the two of you posed with the sold sign, she broke down in tears. What did that moment mean to you?
Man, that meant everything. That was my mother's first house. You know, for me to be able to give her first house, you know, that's a blessing, man, to come from everything that I've come from, everything I've dealt with in my past, to the pinnacle now, to being able to provide that opportunity for her and for myself, you know, it's just amazing. And I it's just a testament to God. Like, I just count my blessings every day.
There's even more, Ty. A few weeks back, you hosted a back-to-school event that provided backpacks, school supplies, and haircuts to nearly 1,200 kids. That's an amazing turnout, 1,200 children. What did it mean to you to see that many people show up? What do you remember about that day? What was that like?
Oh, man, you know, from it being an idea with my team to turn it into a reality, you know, that's a testament to my team and everybody who helped support the cause. And just the fact that 1,200 people came out and supported just shows how much of a need it was in the area. So it's just a blessing that I'm able to be put on this platform to provide that type of service for the needy or for the people who need it. It's just an amazing thing. Once again, it's a testament to God that, you know, I go from basically nothing to being able to provide for people. You know, that's an amazing thing. It's really an amazing thing. Every day I look up and I see what the things I'm capable of doing and the things that I'm doing actually in the community, and I just look at amazement, like, wow, it's just amazing.
I mean, Ty, it's like, it's that journey. Like I mentioned, when you and I spoke back in May, we talked about your journey, and I said it was amazing then, but your journey is even more amazing. So if you consider, if somebody had said to you 10 or 15 years ago that you would be in Buffalo playing for the Buffalo Bills and having the kind of impact that you're having not only on that team but on that community, what would you have said 10 or 15 years ago?
10 or 15 years ago, I would stop lying to me. Like, I couldn't envision it 10, 15 years ago. You know, it's just amazing how my road has wound and it landed me where I've landed. And it's just, you know, it's once again, I can't put it into words how it feels and how amazing it feels. Like, it's just surreal.
Right, so final thought, given where you've been, where you've played, and you've played a lot of different football in a lot of different places, what's it like playing in Buffalo, living in Buffalo, working in Buffalo, and doing it for the Bills Mafia, which loves that team no matter what?
Well, you know, this is a blue-collar town, and, you know, I feel like my temperament and my character fits right in with this area. You know, every day I put my nose down and go to work. Every day I'll try to perfect my craft, and that's the type of energy that I get from the area. So, you know, we mesh well, and I love it here, man. You know, Bills Mafia all day. Go Bills.
He's an offensive lineman with the Bills. He signed with them in March. He did not allow a sack at left tackle last season. Ty Nsekhe back in the jungle and catching up with us. Ty, it's great to have you back. I really appreciate that. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Prepare for your road trips. Before your travel begins, you want to go to O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simple preventative maintenance. Before you go, ensures a safe journey ahead. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Curtis in Morro Bay calls in on the 800 line. And he says, he does this on June 26th. He tells this story that captured the imagination, rather the disbelief, and the punchlines, and even venom and vitriol of the jungle for an entire week. Because he came in and he told this totally unbelievable story. The kind of story that you couldn't even make up. I mean, it was so whack and so lame that it took all sorts of heat. And he had the audacity to come on this show and try and sell it here.
I wanted to tell you about my Father's Day that I just had. My girlfriend and I and my son were backpacking down the Arroyo Seco River, which is on the backside of Big Sur. And on day three, we got to a point on the river where we just couldn't go down. It was just too dangerous. So to make a long story short, we put a message in a water bottle and just waited for the best thing to happen. And the best thing did happen. Two other people on the river actually got that water bottle, read the note, and 8 hours later, we had a chopper hovering above us at 12:30 at night.
So where were you that whole time? As you were waiting to be picked up and rescued, where were you? Were you still on the river?
We were still on the river. We backtracked about a quarter mile up the river to this beautiful beach and made dinner. And we're just hoping that the water bottle got found, because we heard some voices down through the water chute where we were supposed to be headed. You know, about 10:30, we thought, you know, there's no way that they would have found it. And to be honest, actually, the CHP who helicoptered us out of there, they said that no one in U.S. history has ever been found by a message in a bottle. We're actually the first people ever to be found that way. And we were just lucky enough that they did. And we didn't have to depend on, you know, other people that knew we were, you know, on this trip and waiting for them to realize that we were actually missing.
In other words, you had some crazy three-hour tour, huh, Gilligan? I mean, come on, man. Are you kidding me? You're going to waste my time in my real estate with something like that. A dude calling a sports talk radio show. Just some random dude randomly sharing this unsolicited tall tale of being rescued via a message in a bottle. What a troll. I mean, do I look that stupid? Talk about a troll job like Steph Curry's own three or fake Joe Flacco. And obviously, all of you just murdered this guy for it. Sting resets, carrier pigeon blasts, nonstop for the rest of the show that day. And obviously, Curtis was listening to the three-hour character assassination, because the very next day, he emailed in video of the helicopter airlift rescue. And we showed it right here on CBS Sports Network. And then all of a sudden, we're like, maybe this dude is not a troll. Maybe this guy is not lying. Maybe it's possible. But still, there seemed to be some holes in the story. Even if he produced video, I mean, I don't know, maybe he's taking this troll job really deep. I don't know what that video is from. And there seemed to be inconsistencies. So when I got him back on the line, I put him under the hot lamp. In yesterday's phone call, you said that you first heard a helicopter above you at 12:30 at night, but that rescue video is in broad daylight. There seems like there's an inconsistency there. I need you to explain that part of it.
What happened was search and rescue found us at night at 12:30, and then the CHP rescued us at 10 o'clock the next morning. Because there was no place to land the chopper, as you saw in the video, they airlifted us out by a cable. And to do that at night would have been too dangerous.
If there's video, then there's a phone. If there's a phone, it would stand to reason that you don't need a water bottle or a message in a bottle. Why did you not use your phone to call out for help?
I did. I used mine. My son used his. My girlfriend used hers. But there's no cell phone reception out there. We were hoping that maybe 911 might have some type of emergency connection or something, but there wasn't anything.
Chris, what exactly did you write on that note, and who found that bottle?
You know, actually, the guys who found the bottle, they just, you know, got back to the campground as quickly as possible. They did it in about 3 hours. They turned it into the camp host. The lady, Cindy, who got the message, she doesn't know who these guys were. And what was written on the note, we're trapped at the waterfall, can't go any further, we're stuck. Please send help. And then I dated it, so they knew it was actually that day.
All right, so my man had a good answer for pretty much everything. He was not stumbling around telling me that his two sons were named Joe Jr. and Joe the Third, like that fake Joe Flacco. But despite the video evidence and the rather convincing Q&A, a lot of you still did not buy it, including Chris in the East Bay, who not only lives in California, like Curtis, but this guy works for search and rescue, and he was poking holes in the story.
He gets discovered at 11:30, 12 a.m. and by some rescue team, and then he's left alone from the helo for 8 hours. I got a real problem with that, because where's that search and rescue team? Where'd they go? They didn't come down and medically evaluate them for hypothermia. They didn't come check this guy and make sure they didn't have any busted limbs or that, you know, that they're okay. They just up and leave and they're out. All search and rescue in the state of California is attached to law enforcement, and law enforcement has a lot of resources. So I'm a rescue team leader. I roll up on, you know, three soggy people at the bottom of a waterfall. I can't get down there safe with my team. Guess what I'm doing? I'm calling in the rope rescue team, and we're going to rappel down and pick these kids up. Let's say they're all healthy and they're all good. We can hike them out. So let's say someone's injured. I can't get them out. Where's the water resource? They came down by river, right? Where's the law enforcement sheriff's Zodiac with the outboard motor and the dudes in the helmets? Where's those guys? And again, okay, we'll see you later till 8:30. Hope you're all right. Hope you survived the night. No way. I'm just not buying this guy's story. They went right to the helo first? Come on.
What do you make, though, of the videotape that he produced? There's videotape of his girlfriend being airlifted out of there the next morning. What do you make of that?
I'm thinking to myself, how's that guy's cell phone made it 36 hours without going dead? Maybe he's good like me. Maybe he carries an extra battery, but I don't know, man.
I mean, I heard that, and then I started to kind of swing back the other way. That's a guy who does this. He knows what he's talking about. He's a search and rescue captain or leader. And so there, that's where we were stuck, right? Our very own episode 12 of the Serial podcast. Damn good story. But no real ending, because nobody knew what to believe. Until now. Nearly, and again, it started on this show. This is just a random caller saying, hey, Rome, I got a story to tell you. Nearly 3 months after calling me and telling his story twice, ABC World News Tonight dropped this feature earlier this week.
Inside this water bottle, a desperate plea for help. Curtis Whitson was in the middle of what was supposed to be a four-day hike of California's Arroyo Seco in June with his 13-year-old son Hunter and girlfriend Crystal Ramirez. On day three, things went terribly wrong. The group got trapped in an isolated section known as the waterfall. So they got creative. Curtis carving get help on the outside of his Nalgene water bottle and quickly drafting up a note to put inside.
The first thing on it was the date, and then below it said, stuck at waterfall, please send help.
Curtis screwed on the cap and tossed the bottle over the waterfall, hoping someone downstream would notice the lime green lifeline.
Their hopes for a rescue quickly answered,
two hikers nearly a half mile away finding the bottle and notifying a campground manager who alerted authorities.
Amazing. A pilot who rescued the trio said this was the first time in 23 years on the job he had heard of anyone being saved thanks to a message in a bottle.
Holy hell. Curtis in Morro freaking Bay, our very own Curtis, Seaman, the C-note, making the national news rounds. That story has been picked up by dozens of outlets, including the Washington Post. And most importantly, he has been vindicated and validated around here. My man had a message in a bottle. Can you imagine what it must have been like for Curtis? Like, I didn't rush in and annihilate and murder this guy the way many of you did, but I certainly didn't believe this guy. I mean, I'm gonna own that. I did not believe him. You imagine poor Curtis, loves this show, can't wait to call up and talk about this absolutely horrible thing that happened to him, and for an entire day or days, the JTP and the rest of Twitter are just obliterating this guy. Chris in East Bay, the search and rescue guy who was so credible, just absolutely poking holes in his story and blowing it up. And poor Curtis is just sitting back like, are you kidding me? I love this show. I love Rome. I love the clones. I wanted to share this horrible story with them, and they're killing me. And it was true. It was true. It happened. So if any of you would like to apologize to Curtis, you can call in right now and do it. 1-800-636-8686. All right, I'll be honest. I'll be real. Curtis, my man, I never doubted your story. I never doubted you for a second, Curtis. I mean that. I never doubted you. Well, I didn't doubt you after numerous national news organizations vetted your story. Not to make this about us, but ABC News tweeted the segment and called it an exclusive. I guess. If exclusive means that it was exclusively told to the jungle and aired on CBS Sports Network 3 months ago, then congratulations on breaking that story, ABC. Anyway, Curtis, my man, we all owe you not only an apology, but a debt of gratitude. What an awesome, courageous, and brilliant thing to do. To not only go with that message in a bottle, but to date it and to say where you were. And then the video to back it up, and a nice, clean bow to tie around that amazing story that we thought did not have an ending. But most of all, it does. But most of all, thank you for breaking that news here first. My man is like all over the place now. ABC with that. Congratulations on that awesome exclusive, ABC. Is that what you call that now? An exclusive? My man, Curtis, take that victory lap. Do it here. Do it on Twitter. Do it wherever you want. It is all true. He really was saved by a message in a bottle. Incredible. Over a waterfall. I got to admit, when my man Chris in the East Bay called up and said, now, hold up now. I'm in search and rescue. Here's where this story does not add up. I can give you 10 reasons why that guy's not telling the truth. And I got to admit, I started to waver again at that point. At Rich Micklebus tweets, Curtis is a fraud and ABC is fake news. Complicit liars. JTP doing JTP type things. Hey, listen, every once in a while you got to admit you got it wrong. All right, I'm here to say that. We got it wrong, JTP. Don't double down on that. You got it wrong. He's not a fraud. ABC is not fake news. They're not, quote, complicit liars. This guy really did throw a message in a bottle over a waterfall, and it was found by some folks, and they came back, and they rescued him, and it's true. We apologize. Curtis, I'm sorry, my man. It just, you could see where I didn't believe that story. You could see where I did not believe that story. But you were telling the truth. And Curtis, thanks for breaking that news here. All right, when we come back, I've got Alvy's Week That Was. If you JT Pierce still want to call this guy a liar and say that ABC is fake news and that they're complicit, you can try and sell it here, but I've got this guy's back now. And I'm glad we finally have an end to that story. Anthony Barr is my guest. Anthony, good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, how's it going, man? Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. Hey, listen, I know you're thinking about the Packers, Anthony, but take me back, if you would, to Sunday's game against the Falcons. I bring it up because there are some surreal ways to start a season if you're playing defense, but can you imagine a better one than to start the season by sacking Matt Ryan on the first play of the game? Take me through that play. What did you see?
Yeah, we just drew up kind of an early first play of the game, trying to set the tone for the game, and just kind of came unblocked. I think the tackle maybe had been a little confused with the look, and he kind of blocked down, and I just came free. Like I said, not a better way to start the season, kind of just set the tone for the game, and, you know, we were kind of rolling from there.
Is it kind of weird, though, kind of surreal? Like, you had this great quote after the game where you said, quote, "I was more surprised than anybody. I almost hesitated for a second, like, this can't be real, right?" End quote. I mean, how does that feel when you're like, wait, there's no way I'm going to start the season with a sack on the very first play, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, it's really just, at that point, it's not about, you can't blow the layup, you know, you're there. This perfect play drawn up, and for a second you're kind of like, this can't be real, right? They're not just going to leave me unblocked. Okay, well, I'll take it, and got to go and trigger and make the play, and, you know, just don't let them slip out of that one.
That's a great analogy. You can't blow the layup. We're talking to Anthony Barr. All right, then on the third down, you chase Ryan down, and you force a punt that was then blocked, and then the offense scored two plays later. Then on Atlanta's next possession, you forced an interception, and then the offense scores four plays later. So how much did that feel like a statement by your defense against a good offense?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of fast as the defense. We kind of set the tone for the day, and we're able to get off the field on third downs. And you know, fortunately, you know, we got off the field pretty early a couple times, and the offense gave them a short field. Obviously, special teams played a big part in that with the field position. And you know, anytime we get our offense a short field with kind of the weapons that we have, we feel good about our chance of getting in the end zone.
So overall, in terms of the unit, like, you had a really, really big game, but there's so much talent on that defense at each level, and it's a group that's now played for a while together and played for head coach Mike Zimmer for a while. So in terms of upside, how special can this defense be?
I mean, I think we definitely have potential, right? I mean, but that's just a word, and that's something that, you know, we need to fulfill. I think it's really about just going through each day, you know, getting better, trying to be better than we were last week, just honing in on our opponent, understanding who we're playing against, the matchups, and just going out there and playing fast and playing carefree, really. You know, when we're at our best, I feel like is when we're out there, we're not worried about making mistakes. We're not worried about really anything else that's going on other than doing our job, playing fast, playing for each other. And, you know, we were able to do that a lot on Sunday, and we're trying to carry that going forward.
Anthony Barr is my guest. I mentioned Mike Zimmer, and he always speaks incredibly high of you. What's it like to play for him, and how would you describe the relationship you have with him?
It's been awesome. You know, obviously, when I first got here as a rookie, I was kind of a little wet behind the ears, didn't really know, you know, what was going on, just kind of whatever he was telling me to do, just trying to do it at my best. You know, and now, you know, 5-6 years later, you know, I'm able to bring things up and have some suggestions, and so we have really good communication. You know, he trusts me to kind of get the defense where they need to be. And then when things come up throughout the week, I'll mention things to him, he'll mention things to me, and we'll kind of go from there. So it's been a good partnership. You know, it's been a good relationship. And obviously we've had some success in the past. Last year wasn't as great as we were hoping, but we've always bounced back anytime we've had a down year, and I'm expecting no different this year.
See, the thing is, it's even more than you just bringing some things up. As an example, it's not just Mike Zimmer. His son Adam is the linebacker coach. He said, quote, "Anthony Barr is probably the smartest player I've ever coached." He went on to say that you ask questions that the coaches don't think the players would even think about. It's really high praise coming from a coach. What's it like for you to hear something like that from that coach?
I mean, it's great. You know, I think, you know, one of my best assets is just my mental capacity and, you know, what I'm able to keep in and retain, and then what I'm able to project and kind of question and explain to other players and coaches. You know, I think coaches sometimes everything looks good and drawn up on paper, right? But as a player, you're always thinking, okay, where am I most vulnerable at? And, where am I going to be attacked? And so when you bring those things up to the coaches, they may have skimmed over it, you know, or they may have not thought of something like that. So I think it's just different as a player. You kind of just thinking of maybe not the worst case scenario, but where am I weak and what do I need to do in order to protect myself and make sure that I make that play that comes my way.
Vikings linebacker Anthony Barr is my guest. So you're going to face the Packers on Sunday, and you're looking at Aaron Rodgers and a new offense. So when you look at that, what's the number one key in your mind?
Obviously, you know, Aaron's, you know, one of the best, if not the best quarterback in the NFL, you know, so we have our work cut out for us. They're trying to run the ball more this year, which is definitely going to, you know, open things up for him, you know. So I think, first of all, we need to stop the run and force, you know, kind of them to be one-dimensional. And then it's really about being tight in coverage and trying not to let him get out of the pocket and make plays. Obviously, he's most dangerous when the play kind of breaks down and then he goes and kind of freestyles it. And he's, in my opinion, the best in the NFL at that, you know, kind of broken plays. And so it's important for us to stay on our coverage, and, rush him the right way, keep him in the pocket as best we can, and then just go play football. You know, don't play scared. Don't play, like I said, worried about making mistakes. Go out there and be in attack mode, be aggressive, and then we'll live with the results.
Anthony Barr joining us. You know, if we go back to the offseason, a number of teams came really hard for you, and the Jets in particular made a really nice offer, apparently. So from the outside, it would seem like a lot of people would think that being a free agent would be the best time ever because teams are chasing you. But you said it was actually the worst day of your life. Lay that out for me. What was that experience like? Why was that so tough?
Yeah, I mean, I may have, you know, exaggerate a little bit, you know, worst day comment. But it was just a stressful time. You know, I'm kind of like a stress-free guy, kind of pretty easy going, you know, and then you have this really big decision to make about your future and your life. And obviously money is important, you know, to, and it means different things to different people, you know, but for me, my priority was being somewhere where I was happy, being somewhere where I, you know, I felt like we had a chance to win, and being somewhere with a group of people that I wanted to be with. And Minnesota kind of checked out all those boxes, and just kind of being here throughout OTAs and then through training camp and now through the season, it's kind of just reaffirmed my decision, just being within the locker room with the guys that I'm really close with and the coaching staff, and obviously the great city of Minneapolis and the fan base that we have. It's all kind of, you know, exactly kind of what I want. And so there was a little more money out there I could have had, but and I think peace of mind and happiness is priceless, and so I kind of went with that.
Anthony Barr is joining us, and for those who do not know, I mean, you came really close. You actually kind of were committed to going there, sort of, and then decided that it checks all the boxes where I am. And then the story goes, when Harrison Smith talked about you coming back, his voice cracked with emotion. It's really clear how much your teammates love you and what they think of you. How would you describe the brotherhood on that defense, and how much does that show up on the field every Sunday?
Yeah, it's special, man. You know, it's hard to describe, really, you know, without, you know, being in the locker room and being in there with and understanding kind of what we go through on a day-to-day basis together. But we have a really close group. You know, a lot of us have been together now for 5-6 years. And, you know, we really play for one another. You know, obviously we want to each do well individually and go out there and play good and have our own good games. But at the end of the day, we understand that we need each other to be successful. You know, we really count on one another off the field and on the field especially, you know. But we just have such a good rapport, and we're very close, you know, tight-knit group that we don't want to let one another down. So it was important, you know, for us to kind of keep this thing together. And obviously, like I said, we had a tough year last year. We feel like we have everything that we need in the locker room to go and be successful. So that's what we're trying to do this year.
So finally, if you left a little bit of money or more than a little bit of money on the table and you want to stay where you were, what is it about this team and this community that makes it so special to you?
I mean, I do a lot of work here in the community. You know, I have a foundation. We support some moms out here, single moms. My foundation, we know we support single moms, try to educate them, provide scholarships. And so, I'm involved in the community. And then again, like I said, just my teammates and my coaches, they care about me. You know, and I think a good example last year, Everson was going through some things personally, and the team, the organization really stuck by him. They didn't isolate him. They didn't outcast him. We did what we had to do to make sure he was to where he was and to where he needed to be in order to be a good person, happy, you know, healthy person, first of all, and then hopefully get the football part back, you know. So that's just one example of, you know, a lot of things that we do here where I think they do things the right way and they care about us as people more so than football players. And so, that, you know, when you have that kind of support, you know, it's kind of a no-brainer in my opinion.
So then finally, as a quick follow-up, you could spend your time, you could spend your energy, you could spend your money on any number of things. This notion or cause of single moms, why is that so important and so personal to you?
Which, yeah, I mean, Raise the Bar Foundation, that's the name of our foundation, raisethebar.org, if you want, you know, to check out some more information. But it's a personal cause. You know, obviously I was raised by a single mom, and I had great support with my grandparents and the rest of my family. But I understand, and I realize how tough it is for a single mom to raise, you know, a son or two sons, two daughters, whatever it is, you know, on their own. And me and my mom, we understand that, you know, a lot of families, a lot of moms don't have a support system that I was so fortunate to have, you know. So it's our chance to do our part and be that support system for some moms that maybe not have another means, you know. And so it's been a really rewarding and really cool a foundation that we've done so far, and hopefully continue to grow. We're still pretty new, but it's been pretty successful so far.
Good for you. Great cause. He is a two-time All-American from UCLA. He was the ninth pick overall in 2014. Minnesota 1-0 after a really impressive win over Atlanta, and they're at Green Bay on Sunday. Always a great matchup. Anthony Barr, my guest. Appreciate you, Anthony. Thanks so much. Great to have you back on.
Awesome, man. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.
Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. A tremendous Monday to you. Hope you had a great NFL weekend. Let's talk some football. The Thursday night game was boring, but the first Sunday was not. In fact, it was awesome.
Yeah! Deep for Hollywood Brown again. He's got it. Brown off to the races. Touchdown.
Jackson absolutely lit them up.
Not bad for a running back.
I mean, anybody who was running with that garbage that the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback in college would be better as a wide receiver in the NFL. Better apologize for that right now. Charles Davis is my guest.
I think you broke it down so nicely. Thursday night, everybody got all worried about, no one plays in the preseason. Oh, this is terrible. But we broke out in a big way on Sunday, that's for sure.
Mayfield in trouble. Hits
out! So everybody's going to throw us in the trash. I think that's good.
That's the damn truth. That crew was forged in fire. They're tough as hell. They're going to bounce back.
I know what type of men we have in this locker room.
Jim Rome does what the bleep he wants, and that's hype America's team. They're not looking to make the playoffs. Tom Curran.
Here's my guy. What's up, Romy?
My man.
It looks like my underestimation of the Patriots' offensive weaponry is about to get crammed down my throat.
I'll talk about the game.
Now you're going to say to me, of course it'll work here. He's got Tom Brady. He's got Bill Belichick. He has a chance to win a ring. I don't know. It should work, but the only reason it may not work is Antonio Brown.
He can get out of here just as quick as he got here.
AB called Mayock a cracker. Let's say Mayock calls AB the N-word.
Let's be very clear about something. Cracker is not a good word. Cracker, however, is not the equivalent of an N-bomb. It just isn't. I find it hard to believe that I even have to make that statement.
That's a fight you're not gonna win.
Yo, man, remember that time we tried to fight Mike Scott? I'm just looking right now at that overhand right. Let's go look for Joel.
How many sacks we get up today? Six? Yeah, so we gotta drop that number down a little bit.
Six sacks is a little bit too high. We might need to get that number down. You think, Laramie? Here's an even better idea. Instead of reducing that number, how about you eliminate that number?
Drop that number down a little bit.
Will Brinson. What worries you more about last night? How Houston's offensive line played over the course of that game? How their defense played in the final drive? Or how Bill O'Brien calls plays?
Yes.
I wanted to be able to come here and apologize to everybody, the fans, the players, and truly tell you how sorry I am for the way it ended.
My man, did you also apologize to the pavement for leaving half your face on it? We are joined by Carson Palmer. How do you like the fit of Antonio Brown?
I don't like it. I don't like it at all. And I think it's going to end ugly for AB.
When you were playing with Chad Johnson, what was he like?
Chad looks like, a dream compared to what AB's been pulling.
Casey Hayward is my guest. Yesterday was your birthday.
I had some family or friends come in. I'm not a big birthday guy, but I celebrate life. So everybody don't get to see 30, so I celebrate.
So 18 years ago today, everything changed.
That kid hadn't talked you out of it. You would have been on that plane.
And a number of you do reset that every year at this time. And I know a number of you have never heard that before.
I've been a Jim Rohn fan. Anybody talk about Jim Rohn, I'm whipping their ass.
Talking to Colorado head football coach Mel Tucker. You were part of Barry Alvarez's first recruiting class.
Coach Alvarez is the man. I used to think he was in the mob, you know.
Y'all can crown him if you want to crown him.
Walker's my guest.
I really wasn't taking shots at them. I was taking shots at the analyst that said that the Browns was a Super Bowl team. I basically said, you crowned them already, so if you want to crown them, crown them.
Guilty on this end. Hey, look, there was a lot of hype. I was the guy banging that drum the loudest.
You see this watch?
Beckham's like, you see this watch?
You see this watch?
Yes. This watch costs more than your house.
More than your car.
Your kid's college education and everything you have in your raw.
How much you make?
We're preparing for one day at a time.
Your problem is not with the people asking the questions.
Didn't I just answer that?
It's with the answers that you have to come up with.
What's been said has been said.
And with the guy you brought in.
Miami's a good team.
That's your problem.
We're working on Miami.
We're not the problem.
Things that don't involve me, don't involve me.
JLC, what do you make, Jason, of how everything is unfolded?
I don't know. I think my head is still spinning a little bit, Jim.
Like any other sport, it's got issues. The sport needs to take a hard line. It needs to make a stand. A stand for honesty. A stand for integrity. And unless this changes, the sport does remain in grave danger. We're talking to PJ Fleck.
Last week it was Indiana Jones. He travels everywhere, whether it's Egypt, and he doesn't have all these weapons at time. Got to be smarter, and he's got to be able to find a better way to do things.
McCaffrey trying to loop to the left. Can't get there!
But this is just what happens when you take thousands of hits. And the Cam Newton is just another example of, it doesn't matter how big you are, you can't take hits forever.
Twitter!
Fellas, You've had your fun.
Yes.
I understand. He'd rather pass out flyers for the next Neighborhood Watch program than go through your tweets. Whatever. Everybody's got their path. Mark Canna is my guest.
How do you find these places? I'm like, well, I don't know. I look on your phone for 15 minutes and find something you like.
Finding the bottle and notifying a campground manager.
I never doubted you for a second, Curtis. I didn't doubt you after numerous national news organizations vetted your story. We apologize.
$70 an hour.
Wedgies.
Row the boat, Sky Mile, go Gophers.
Now what's my name?
Don't become Fizzle.
Thanks, Joey.
Yeah.
Miami's a good team.
Kill the bleeping head.
Oh, man. Now we're getting to the fun stuff, Jimmy.
Can't blow the layup.
Bills Mafia all day. Go Bills.
Thanks to a message in a bottle.
Good night now. Good night now.